Well, Randy Granger, Dick Hoffman, thank you very much for joining me on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Both Penn Charter and Friends Select are celebrating their 325th anniversaries this year. Tell me, I'll start with you, Randy, and then go to you, Dick. How did the schools get started?
Well, the schools were started by a larger direction, a larger vision of William Penn. The intention was, of course, in the province of Pennsylvania to introduce what would later become known as comprehensive education for all students. Penn believed very deeply that the experiment he was conducting in the province of Pennsylvania was one that would depend on a democratic condition wherein all the people in that democracy were educated to a level of high reasoning and the ability to, make decision and be reflective about practice. So the school was set up as an expectation or responsibility of the government, but the largest group of people were Quakers in the province at that point in time. So the direction of the school's founding was from the meeting. That was really a public school. It was for all people, all children.
And Dick, I guess Friends Select started in largely the same way, but the schools at this point, one of the tenets of the schools are that they operate independently. Was that always the case? Did Friends Select have its own direction at that time, 325 years ago?
Yes. Each of the schools has their own, in the old days it was the school committee, basically mostly appointed by the monthly meeting. And then that, of course, became the Board of Trustees. But each Quaker school is independent, although we often cooperate with each other on many, many areas.
There have been a lot of changes in education. It's no longer the public school. There is a public school system, right. And there are many other models of school. So what do you think accounts for the longevity of Quaker education?
Well, I think it is the Quaker belief in that of God in every person. And the fact that even though Friends Select was originally set up for Quaker children, that's where the word select comes from, the schools, all of the Quaker schools have over the years spoken to the needs of a wide variety of students and parents. And I think one of the major areas is that of service to others, where the Quaker schools have long done service, which other schools now are following through on. So it set a good example in many ways.
In your mind, has Quaker education changed over the years? Is it largely the same core principles?
Well, I think the principles are core. As Dick points out, certainly service is a central factor. Also tolerance, and tolerance meaning not just putting up with difference, but actually valuing what can be learned from difference is one of the core ingredients that has allowed Friends Education to really thrive. There is this creative tension in Friends cultures and Friends learning communities that is very much first desired and second very much acted on every day. So difference is welcome, and difference helps us to see the world differently.
When I think of Quaker education, and I didn't attend Friends schools, but I had many friends who did, and I did attend a Quaker summer camp. One of the iconic, things about Quaker institutions is Quaker meeting. And I've been to some Quaker meetings where there are some really earnest and insightful things said, and I've been to some that, frankly, are just deadly and silent and often a little bit awkward. What's your take on meeting, and particularly meeting in an age when young people have kind of a notoriously short attention span?
Well, I do think that from a place of silence, a very deep thinking can come. And whether that's a faith thinking or thinking about something else, I think it can come from a place of silence as powerfully and forcefully as it can from a place of discourse. I have seen the sine curve, if you will, of meetings that are meetings of deep engagement and meetings of lesser engagement. I've seen that come and go, ebb and flow. We expect that in Friends schools because we model behaviors that we believe are helpful in how we grow and how we remain vital and reflective as human beings. And so we work with those sine curves, if you will, of quality of meeting as they come up and try to solve the problem. I mean, there just isn't a rule book for what to do when it gets on the downturn of the sine curve, so to speak.
Anything to add to that, Dick?
Yes, I think over the years I've been at Friends Select, one of the interesting things is that some kids will complain bitterly about having to sit through meeting, and then they graduate and go off to college and come back later in their lives and say, I really miss that opportunity to sit and reflect and share with others. And, of course, the student meetings vary widely. We have separate meetings for lower, middle, and upper, and obviously the little kids get up and make very short, direct statements, and the older students can be very thoughtful and sometimes very lengthy in their sharing. So it varies widely, but the interesting thing is that many of the students who are not Quaker do find after a while that they appreciate meeting.
And I would suspect that middle school students are less likely to talk. Is that
yes,
am I right in that?
You're absolutely right.
You're both archivists, and these are two schools that date back over three centuries. I would suspect there are some pretty interesting things in the archive. I'll just ask both of you, starting with you, Randy, to describe some interesting items that you have.
Well, again, I tend to work with the earlier stuff from the 17th century and the early 18th century. And I think for me, the most powerful piece in our holdings is the petition from the members of the meeting, of the Philadelphia Monthly Meeting, to then Provincial Governor Markham, who was in Penn's absence serving as the governor. The year is 1697, and what they're asking for is the creation of a public school for the children of the city of Philadelphia. And that document, I won't go into that document in great detail, but I will say that that document and its wordage resonates through every subsequent charter that William Penn created and signed, and there were three: one in 1701, 1708, and the 1711 that we operate by today. Each of the important points were contained in those charters, and our structure for overseers remain as stated in that earliest petition. So it's a powerful document in terms of what schools should be. It's also almost a visionary document. It is a visionary document about the ideal learning environment, learning setting for all children. And that to me is the most amazing piece of our holding.
Dick, some interesting materials from the Friends Select Archive?
Yes, there are quite a few things. We have a grandfather clock that was in a meeting house at 5th and Chestnut. It was built by John Child, and it was used to set the clocks in the State House Tower, which is now, of course, Independence Hall. And the clock still works. It's several hundred years old, and it's a beautiful piece of equipment. We also have things that show how a school could be affected by what went on in its neighborhood, et cetera. Reading the minutes of the women's meeting in the late 18th century, yes. They've used to meet monthly and discuss the select schools, and they met in August of 1793 and didn't meet again until December because of the late deadly pestilence, namely the yellow fever epidemic of 1793. So there's where life in the city impinged on Quaker education. And then there are other pieces of equipment and furniture that are interesting. We have one of the original Spitz planetariums that Armand Spitz donated to the school when his daughter went there.
I've been speaking with Randy Granger, archives assistant at William Penn Charter School, and Dick Hoffman, archivist at Friends Select School. Thank you both so much for speaking with me.
Thank you for
having
us.
Thank you.